Ahoy, Vachon. How's the French say, Vachon? This is the Brown Briefly, where less is more, more or less, coming to you live over KVSH 101.9 FM, Voice of Vachon, your island connection. Please make us part of your day. And be advised that our assertions and views, which can modestly be described as progressive persuasion, do not in any way reflect the opinions of KVSH or Voice of Vachon.
That was the voice of Brian Brown, creator of the Brown Briefly. Brian developed Briefly and brought his high standards of hosting an intelligent discussion of current events laced with humor and empathy. Brian's central concept was less is more, more or less, and he invariably offered much, much more. Today, let me introduce the Brieflies. Guiding us from behind the board at the Voice of Vachon's Gene Bosch broadcast studio in bustling and bodacious downtown Vachon, and keeping us on course, even if it may be into the treetops, is former airline pilot, treetop landing aficionado, flight instructor, Vachon Airport Commissioner, West Texas devotee, and former military intelligence specialist, Truman O'Brien.
Oh, gosh, good morning, Truman. I thought you'd never get through all of that. Jeez, Wes.
And all you got to do, Truman, is push the big red button.
I know, and I pushed the wrong dang one. No. Sorry about that. Got it. You know, sometimes that happens.
Yes. Thank goodness you weren't in the airplane.
There you go. That's right.
Sitting next to Truman is his wingmate, fellow treetop aficionado, arbitrator, mediator, two-time Fulbright scholar, high-end women's shoe salesperson. We need to explore that a bit more in the future sometime. Pinkerton guard of Boeing's first 747, former tort law professor, and Washington State Assistant Attorney General Craig Bellis. How are you?
I'm fine. Thanks, Bruce.
You're welcome. Zooming in from his home here on Vachon, you are at home, are you, Kevin?
I am at home.
Good.
We finally made it back home.
All right. Zooming in from his home here on Vachon above Burton is the voice of Indivisible Vachon and the Vachon Climate Action Group, our indefatigable defender of democracy who strives to create a livable planet overseen by a government we can all appreciate or at least tolerate, Kevin Jones. Welcome, Kevin.
Thank you. Thank you, gents. Good to be here. I am, I think, literally the odd man out. When it comes to the show today, the only Zoomer on the Brown Briefly this morning.
We're glad to have you with us, even if it is by Zoom. I am historian Bruce Hallman, and joining us today...
Now, wait a minute, Bruce. You can't just say, I am in... You can't give us all of these big, long intros and just say, you're a historian. Come on.
That's it.
He's the captain of the Vachon. He's the president of the Museum Heritage Society. What else are you, Bruce? Come on.
So much more.
So much more.
I'm an honorary Kiwi and an honorary Aussie.
There you go. That's probably the most important. All right, so go ahead.
All right. Sorry. Thank you, Truman. joining us today is Mike Kirk.
Yeah. Thank you.
Burton resident, retired teacher and principal at Vachon Schools, volunteer firefighter, former Vachon Island fire chief, one of the leaders of the Burton Trail Project, curator of the Vachon Heritage Museum's 2016 exhibit, Schools Through the Windows of History, How Schools Unified the Island. And he was also one of the grand marshals of the Vachon Strawberry Parade. What year was that, Mike?
Oh, that was, I think, about 5 years ago, Bruce.
Pre-COVID.
Yes.
Well, welcome, Mike.
Well, thank you, and thank you for inviting me today. As far as being fire chief, I was interim fire chief three times. And then worked for the district 5 years after I retired.
And what does that say about Vachon's fire chiefs?
I was going to say.
We'll get there later, right?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm the proud owner of a fire extinguisher, an ABC fire extinguisher that you signed.
Oh, good.
It's autographed, so I keep that in a spot where I can reach it quickly.
Hey, before we jump into talking with Mike about Vachon Schools, let's take a moment and check in with everyone about what special things you've been experiencing this past week. Kevin, how about you?
Well, you know, it is good to be back on Vashon, and some of the change of the season, I decided today is a good time to disconnect all the drip irrigation systems and turn the timers off until next summer. But we're also getting acquainted with our furry and feathered friends. The nuthatch is still hanging upside down from the bird feeder on most occasions, and the squirrels are back looking for peanut handouts, which Susie accommodates them almost on a daily basis. It's good to be back on the rock.
Good to have you back. Craig, how about you?
I completed my project of rebuilding the stairs on one of the decks around the house, and it took me a week. and I blame the fact that it has all sorts of angles on the stairs, because I said to myself, how is it that they can build a giant troll in 3 days and it takes me a week to just redo a few stairs? Ridiculous.
Well, if you see a picture of this on Facebook, folks, you will be very appreciative of why it took that long. That thing is complicated, and you did a beautiful job. I was really impressed.
Thanks. That's why it took me so long.
Exactly.
Measure. The other thing, when I was done, I celebrated by going seeing the Manhattan Transfer at VCA, a group that I kind of fell in love with back in 1975 when they came out with their first big album. And they were here at VCA, and it took me back. So.
Cool. Oh, great. Mike, how about you? What have you been up to this past week?
I have spent 9 days at the high school as principal or vice principal. In the last week and a half, had a day off Friday. I'll be back at McMurray Monday and Friday for Miss Grigorich, teaching seventh graders again, as I started with in '66. Wow. So that's basically taking my time. I'm just finishing recertifying for my EMT, the 3-year certification. So that kept me busy.
I bet. Do you get hazardous duty pay when you're principal of the high school?
Not with that bunch. I tell you, they are the easiest bunch of kids, maybe because I know their parents and grandparents so much. Yes. No, I really enjoy working with them.
That's fantastic.
I have to tell you, Mike, I know we're going to be getting into a lot of this later on, but my daughter was in high school, I believe, when you were still principal, and but she has very fond memories of you and your experience there.
Well, actually, I was principal of McMurray, not the high school.
Okay. Well, maybe that's what it was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
Great. Truman, how about you?
I'm going to combine Kevin and Craig's things, because we picked all of our grapes and got ready to do, and I juiced 6 gallons of juice out of the grapes. Oh. And I even gave one big basket away. I had so much of it. I mean, and there's still some grapes out there to do. And we had a little visitor in our backyard. We had a mink in our backyard this week. And nice. I know that there used to be a mink farm. Where was it? Down in
two
mink farms? Were they down in Eliza Buell or somewhere in that area?
One on the Burton Peninsula by Bob Larson's house.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, there was one on Burton Peninsula. There was one right at Judd Creek. And then I've heard rumors that there was one down on Bank Road.
Oh, on Bank. Yeah. Oh, okay. Well, I know that a bunch of them got away, or they let them loose or whatever. So we were overrun with them for a while. But I haven't seen one in quite a while. So this was a real unusual experience to have one actually looking in our back window. Standing up on one of our garbage cans back there, we're like, whoa, where'd you come from, you know? But anyway, that was kind of fun. That's it for me.
Great. Well, my week, this past weekend, was my daughter's birthday, so we had all the family out and had a great birthday celebration. Took everybody to see Oscar, the King of the Birds, troll, which is they were all very impressed with. I was impressed with it. It's a magnificent sort of addition to Vashon. So, and then everybody sort of hunkered down for the rains to arrive, and sort of feels like summer's over and we're into a very different season. Although I have hopes that the sun will come back
this weekend, I think.
Yes, right.
Yeah. The weekend is the forecast for sun, so yes.
Nice. Let's hope. Today, like all days, is a significant day. Today is National Pancake Day, so go out and get your pancakes. It's also Johnny Appleseed Day, and Johnny Appleseed was actually a real person. guy named John Chapman. He was a horticulturalist in early colonial America, sort of the trans-Appalachian West. He brought apple trees into particularly the Ohio Valley and was known for sort of propagating apple trees and giving away plants and all that sort of stuff. And so Johnny Appleseed has become a famous American folk hero.
Gee, if I had known that beforehand, I guess I should have read the script.
That would help, Craig.
Yeah, you're welcome.
I would have worn my Johnny Appleseed medal.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
When you were a kid?
Yeah, and Boy Scouts back in Ohio, we hiked the Johnny Appleseed Trail over in Brown County, Indiana, 50-mile hike over there. And it, I guess he spent a fair amount of time planting apple trees in that whole area, as you indicated.
Yep. Yeah, he did. Yeah. So it was a much bigger thing when I was a kid in school. You know, we celebrated Johnny Appleseed Day. I don't know if they still do that. Mike, do they do that in the schools anymore?
I don't think so. No.
One of the things of the past, the glorious past. Speaking of glorious.
Well, you were closer to the Johnny Appleseed.
The ancient history.
There you go.
Speaking of glorious, 1688, the Glorious Revolution installed William of Orange, who was Dutch, as King William III of England. And, of course, that led the Protestant colonizers in Northern Ireland, who were colonizing Northern Ireland at the time, to call themselves Orangemen after William of Orange. And that's how orange becomes the color of Northern Ireland and green the color of Southern Ireland.
And is that also why the Netherlands today, to this day, yes. wear orange?
Yes, right. Yeah, William of Orange was part of the royal family of Holland.
I'll be darned. I never knew that.
And the English needed a king, and so boom.
Sure, there you go. I'll be darned.
So this is also the day in 1907 that New Zealand becomes a dominion within the British Empire, which gives it a degree of self-governance, and then it becomes an independent nation after World War II in 1945. Mm. This is also the day in 1946 that Hergé publishes The Adventures of Tintin. Mm. So if you have any children or grandchildren of a certain age, Tintin is a fantastic set of books for them to read. And it's also the day in 1969 that the Beatles released their last album as a group, Abbey Road.
And we just played the whole album on Scramble this morning.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, the whole thing.
Oh, great,
yep.
Great, fantastic. How time flies.
Yes.
With us today for Small Talk is Mike Kirk to talk to us about Vashon Schools. So welcome, Mike, and maybe what you can do is tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for the invitation. My history began here in 1966. I just completed a teaching certificate at Seattle University. And in those days, superintendents would come to universities and interview prospective teachers. Well, Jerry Hester failed to arrive at Seattle University. Maybe ferries were out of service. I called and made an appointment, came to Vashon. That was May of 66. We interviewed for about half an hour. He sent me down to the old Burton School to talk with the principal, Andy Taggart, and a week later I was hired to teach 7th and 8th grade history and language arts at Burton Elementary. I told Patty I worked for a few years, and teachers in those days were changing jobs quite often. Stayed for 56 years, never made that change.
And Burton School was where the skate park is today, correct?
Yes, yep. It was an elementary built in 54, similar to the Vashon Elementary. It was grades 1 to 8. The kindergarten was there on 204th as a separate little building.
Hmm. Well, is that the little building that's
is now the maintenance building. It was one of the two buildings of the 1909 Center School.
Oh.
And actually, that was the play shed, as Keith Putnam tells me.
Mm-hmm. I'll be darned.
Yeah, Kevin.
So, Mike sounds, of course, I'm always interested in island history. I live right above Burton, so I understand there have been huge changes in the town of Burton over the years. I'm curious what your perspective was when you first arrived on the island versus what you see now in terms of significant changes that you that stick in your mind.
Yes, well, the population, I know we've increased. It does not seem that we've increased that much. The ferry system, it seemed to be, well, there were certainly fewer deckhands to get you boarded. Of course, there was no upper deck. There was, I think, about the same number of small businesses. And, of course, you know, I was mostly associated with the schools and then the fire district at that time. There were about 50 of us, all volunteers. No women until 1969. I could speak most, for example, what the schools were like. Probably more so at this point than the towns. The student population by 1969 were 1,800 students. We're now at 1,315 students. There were five schools. The kindergarten was isolated, as I say, there on 204th. Part of the building was the old center school. McMurray opened in 69. The district had bought 100 acres of the central campus, and that's where they had room for McMurray, and then later in 95 for Chautauqua. As teachers, we had no half days, no late days. There was no prep period, you know, at the secondary level. Elementary teachers did their playground duty, had a half an hour for lunch. We had no off-island students, although there was a period in the 1920s when some students were coming to Vashon High School from Olalla. Superintendent's office, 1966, it was Jerry Hester, Mrs. Thirkelson, and Mrs. Kelly. That was it, to run 1,800 students in five buildings. The board members, Carl Singer, Tom Beal, Bill Kirshner, they had a lot to do with the formation of the Central Campus and McMurray. The high school, wood shop, automotive, typing classes, those are the popular ones. But it was that large population. Elementary classes could have, you know, 30 or 32 students, you know, at that time. That would be unheard of today. Dress code for male teachers, sport coat, tie, and a shirt. You could take it off in the classroom if it was warm, but by golly, you go down by the office, have it on. Female teachers, a dress or a skirt. And I think even girls up to eighth grade were required to wear a dress or a skirt. Certainly no Levi's, no Crocs, you know, for teachers. So that, you know, was the dress code in those days.
No Crocs, did you say?
No Crocs. Well, they didn't
even
exist.
Can't we reinstitute that dress code?
Good. So that, you know, those impressions I have, you know, the school district mainly and the fire department being all volunteer.
Yeah, Truman.
Yeah, you know, I moved here first in 1970, so I was a few years after you and served on the fire department as well as a volunteer. And I remember the population was quite different, I think, in those days. We had a large hippie contingent, you know, that had moved
well,
out
that,
here.
Yes, and that did affect the schools. You know, the war, Nixon, the hippies, and that population, you know, the hairstyle, the cuts and requirements and dress and free speech. It was a rowdier time, I'll tell you, than it is today in our schools.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I know that, you know, with the fire department being mostly volunteer, in fact, I think it was pretty much all volunteer. There were a few paid, I think, at the
Chief
55.
Harmeling and his dad worked part-time and were paid for that.
Right.
Then that increased as the need increased. Right. And the inclusion of women in the fire department was due to a house fire down the Tahlequah area that we didn't get enough volunteers out. I was teaching school that day. So it was decided that we would accept women, but they could only drive the vehicles. Couldn't become fire. Well, that changed pretty quickly when Pam Beal and Virginia Krantzovich joined, and they were very capable.
Yeah.
And then eventually EMT systems started.
Right. Yeah, I remember I was at the Burton Station. That's where my duty station was.
Yes, with Sid and Penny. And
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's where I got to meet them. They're the Farsis, of course, he's talking about. And I remember there was a fire. I was down at Camp South, and there was a fire in this kitchen. And we're all over at Sid's house, by the way. And
yes.
And when the call came in, the Plectron went off, and we went, oh, my gosh, fire at Camp South. And so I raced in and grabbed the water truck. And I can't remember the gentleman that used to drive the water truck all the time. I'll think of his name in a minute. But anyway, he showed up, and I was already pulling out. And I said, I'm going to drive because I know that road really well. And I went flying down that road. That guy said, you're never driving this truck again.
And, yes, and it's quite a hazardous road to go down.
Oh, yeah, for sure. But anyway, sorry, I just couldn't resist.
You know, I understand, Mike, that you curated an exhibit at the museum recently, the schools through the windows of history, how schools unified the island.
Yes.
What was that all about, and what were the takeaways that you had from that?
Well, that was in 2016. Bruce approached me and helped, to see that came together there. And it was there for, I think, about 6 months. I received a lot of help, from the museum, Jessica Dwyer, Royce Wall making the graphics for that. And the idea, of a theme for it, I have a photo here.
Oh, wow.
You're going to have to hold that real close to the mic
for people. Yes, yeah, hold it up there. This was a sketch made from an old black and white photo.
Wow.
Of three girls looking into the window of the old Maury Center School. The original photo had the head of the one girl kind of chopped off, and you couldn't see much of the building, the windows. So I approached art student at the high school, Sierra Grigorich, about 4 years ago, and she took the photo and then made this this print of it. The inspiration was the girls looking in the window. So windows. Windows protect us from the weather, the wind, rain, etc. We observe various things outside, but we have no contact. We can't physically contact at that point until we would go outside and engage with whatever was outside. To engage with history, that's the past. It's gone. And so how do we engage with history? Well, history, books, tapes, video, sounds, sights, smells, they are the window to the past, as really sharp historians will bring that to life for us. So my idea was to bring things together there, objects, pictures, recorded documents, even the old kindergarten interior door, mimeograph machine, ditto machine, projector. I even went online and found the recipe to make the old that peppermint white paste we used to use,
yes.
And some kids would eat it in kindergarten, first grade. And then I wanted some sound. So I had, I forget the gentleman at the Heritage, he found a recording of kids playing on the playground. So during the exhibition, you would, in the background, hear children on a playground. It was so realistic that for the first few days of the exhibit, some of the folks working there could hear, kids, where are they? When are they coming in the building? They felt it was real.
Oh, that's great.
So it helped me bring together, history. To preserve it for the district, which I had an interest in doing. And we have records that go back to 1895, the state registers, board minutes and things like that. And I'm still, working to see that those are preserved. But historians are those windows that bring us the past, bring it to life.
Well, that is a great analogy. I really, really appreciate that, Mike. And looking back that far, so like what is it like for in the 1890s and through the 20s and on up, till the time you arrived? What kind of changes occurred there?
Well, in the you know, the 1890s, as Bruce has accounted, and Roland Carey in their books, and isolated communities on the shore, connected with small boats. They didn't interact much with others until years passed. And education for children was very vital. So there were homeschools for the children. They would use the boats to get to Tacoma or over to Kitsap Peninsula for trade. But there was that isolation. But eventually, as roads and trails developed and people, population grew, they wanted their kids together, maybe with the next community. So somebody started a school and a house, and eventually the first buildings, actual two-room or one-room schoolhouses began, like in 1890. The first districts of the eight school districts on the island formed in like 1890. And it was pretty primitive. You were walking to school or taking a horse ride. I was struck by the fact that Laurel Tingley, whom I bought my house from, an early teacher, she and her brother Elmer, at ages 9 and 13, were walking from Burton to Southwest 260th, where the Southern Heights School was. Now, that's at least 2.5 miles up the Inspiration Point Hill. And then Burton began its first elementary in about 1903. But kids truly did walk miles to go to school. Or the school became the center for public meetings. When problems developed, there we were at the schoolhouse.
Did you say there were eight school districts on the island?
Yes. Each formed around a particular school.
Wow.
Liza Beulah, Burton, Vashon,
Doctor.
And then that would get to the consolidation in a later question here.
Wow! Before we move on to that, the name of the exhibit that was curated is how schools unified the island.
Okay.
Did the island need to be unified? Was it separate? Was there a schism of some sort in the island?
There was. Just by the very situation of settlement, who settled where on the shores, you know, so they'd have transportation somewhere because it was difficult getting to the uplands. As it grew, I think noteworthy was the fact that Burton was such a great port close to Tacoma. It was thought that Burton was really going to be the commercial center. Not Vashon, but when the Great Northern Railroad made its terminus in Seattle versus Tacoma, well, then Seattle became the center for trade and commerce. And thus the first boat, eventually the boat ferry system, they're connected with Seattle, and Burton was kind of forgotten in a way. When the first paved road was developed from Center north to Vashon, nothing was done down to Burton. So there was a formation there on Southwest 196th Cemetery Road became the Mason-Dixon line. Hmm. It was the separating line between the two grade schools. If you lived south, you went to Burton. If you lived north, you went to Vashon. And there was even talk, Barbara Steen told me, that kids... Vashon Elementary kids, Burton kids, when they went to the Island Theater, the Burton kids would sit on one side and the Vashon kids sit on the other side. They did have sports competition between them, but they were separate.
You know, that I found that really fascinating. I've always wondered why, being an island, we don't have a maritime business center, you know, and I've always wondered why, and that's why. I mean, that's really interesting, the fact that the terminus of the railroad was in Seattle, so the north end became more important. Mm-hmm. I'll be darned. Interesting.
Yeah. Kevin.
Kevin.
Okay, so Mike, you were talking about the students walking to school. So my mother and her brother, my uncle, actually lived on Vashon for a while. Mm-hmm. And my mother had always told this story that in the early 1940s, during World War II, one of the drills was the students would actually be asked to crawl home on their hands and knees in the event of an attack on the island. And so this was apparently some kind of a drill. So this is her story, so I'm just repeating this. She said her brother, my uncle, nearly drowned one day on the way home doing this exercise. And she tells me, so I'm asking questions like, where did this happen on Vashon? And it was the elementary school north of town by the VES soccer fields now. It's now, the building's been removed. And that's where the school was, and the house was that they lived in was south of there. And I'm thinking, how could you possibly drown on the way home? And until they cleared the blackberries from the little pond in front of the little Norwegian church, which is right across the street from that school, I never realized that there was a lake there. And apparently that indeed was where he somehow nearly met his demise, crawling home from school in early 1940s.
I would have to ask, you know, Mike Suddeth with his review of the Old Island News record, if that, in fact, I had never heard that story that we were, that involved.
Well, I repeat it in all the detail that it was told to me, but I still kind of, you know, got to wonder.
Mike, maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, going back to that question about how the schools unified the island. How did that consolidation of schools, I mean, there were eight school districts, there were schools all over the island, and today we have three and they're all in one location. Could you sort of tell us a little bit about that?
Yes, Russo. People, I think, saw that, you know, one school in one of the districts was a little better than theirs, and a hope to improve. And I'm sure that there were various qualities of teachers in those days, and that so I think that had something to do with it, that maybe somebody had a newer building, just the program, whatever they offered, was considered better. The main thing that brought consolidation about was the situation with the high schools. The first high school was on the Burton Peninsula in 1904, and the building is still there, separated into two houses. And although Vashon College had an academy and a high school program when it opened, Burton High School became really the first one. It lasted till about 1912, when a brick building was built just south of the Judd Creek Bridge, a two-story brick building. And all the island high school students went to Burton. Well, pretty soon Vashon wanted their high school. And so one developed in 1912 on the site of the Harbor School. And it also included the Vashon Grammar School and the Vermontville Grammar School. Vermontville was just on Southwest 156th off the highway. So there were two elementaries consolidating with the high school. And now we had the rivalry between the two high schools, which opened the door for the need for more consolidation. Students from Docton would come by boat to go to Burton High School. They would get off the boat at a dock there by about Southwest 230th and the highway, and then walk up to the school. Well, the rivalry became intense, so intense that Roland Carey remarks of a football game at Burton, which had to be played in daylight because there was no stadium or lights. Well, one school made a 20-foot paper banner and was parading it around, heckling Vashon, maybe Vashon High School. Well, tempers were raised, and as Roland Carey said, the lawnmower hit the beehive at that point. Participants rushed to the field, including adults, and a great fight broke out. There were also cases of vandalism after the game. I had a question there.
So, yeah, given that sort of history of the high schools, what was the linchpin event, do you think, that caused consolidation into a single high school?
I can't say that, you know, it was just that. I think there were other vandalism and broken windows and things that were happening between the two schools. I think probably just for financial reasons, running two high schools, it wasn't until, 1928 that a meeting was held in Chautauqua, and the island agreed that we will go to a union high school at the center of the island and bring all the students together in one place. So probably just, you know, population growth, transportation, saving money. Bruce may have, you know, added detail.
I mean, it's important to put this in context of not only are the schools consolidating, but the ferries are consolidating into, I mean, you got to remember in 1910, 1920, you know, there's eight school districts, you know, there's 30 ferry docks around the island. There's 15 or 16 community stores. You know, every little community had their own store. And by 1940, there's two ferry docks. There's one school district. You know, it's sort of everything collapses. And mainly, I think, it's because of the automobile and roads.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say, we had at the our VCC, you know, the telling stories, we had some of the elders. In fact, Barbara Steen was one of them who talked. And the thing that fascinated me was the fact that to go from one side of the island to the other was a big deal because the roads were so bad, and if you might catch a ride on a car, but mostly you were either walking or riding a horse.
So the school district didn't start a bus service till the 1930s.
Wow.
And that's why Mike referred to this earlier. Some students from Olala and Ferengaria would actually catch the Mosquito Fleet boats over to Cove or Covos and then walk up the hill to the Vashon High School because it was easier to get to Vashon than it was to get to Port Orchard because there weren't the roads.
No roads, yeah. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to this day, I mean, I've said this before, but flying over the island, it is amazing how heavily forested the island is. Yeah. And if you think back, you know, to before all these paved roads were in, it must have been really a chore to get anywhere.
Yeah.
You know, interesting. Yeah, Kevin.
This is not a Vashon story, but a good friend of our family was born around the turn of the previous century, their family homesteaded out in the Kent Valley. And Papa Upper, is his name. He was actually in the cavalry in World War II, if I remember this right, where the horses were there to move the artillery pieces when it was muddy, because the jeeps and the tired vehicles would bog down. So anyway, when we asked him where did you live, he lived in town around Lake Union, and he had the farm out there in Kent, and between Kent and Renton, actually. And so what was it like to get out to the farm? Well, it took all day. First you get the wagon, then you hitch up the horses. And basically it was like dirt roads to get out there. So it's pretty phenomenal to think back of the early days of travel around here.
You know, Mike, you're obviously very, very familiar with the history of the schools on the island. And you'd be, I think, the ideal person to ask the question about problems that faced the schools in the past and some you think may be problems that need to be faced in the future. You have some opinions on that?
I think one of the problems, of course, is the budgets and financing, state support and local levy support. You know, the school districts relied on levies. Some passed, some didn't over the years. We're still facing that today with the state funding the McLaren Act, and that they're still falling short there. In those days, the buildings, the two elementary schools, the 1953-54, were block, stone, brick, and living in the earthquake zone that we do, there's always concern about earthquakes, and that's consequently. Chautauqua was built. Upkeep on the buildings. Both those buildings had a hot water heating system boiler. Worked to provide the hot water. Well, eventually the pipes deteriorated. The floors buckled. You could trip on the tiles that were rising, and Then they had to put in a new heat system, so they put heat pumps on the roof. They wanted to protect those, so they put roofing on, which raised the fire load. They had to seismically upgrade the building. Vachon Elementary, north end of that building, was built on a fill, Craig Harmling noted. And so it began to settle. Kids could pass notes between the block stone bricks between one classroom and the next.
Oh, wow.
So that was a sign. And so that's why, you know, Chautauqua did. The kindergarten was a standalone building. The teachers rarely got any time to themselves. There's a morning and an afternoon. 1 year, the north end was morning, if you live north of the Mason-Dixon line, Cemetery Road. Next year, the south end. As more moms went to work and needing daycare, you know, the kid would be at grandma's house in Burton 1 day a week and the north end the rest, and we couldn't get a bus down 1 day a week. So that became a problem. And then in about 1987, the enrollment of kindergarten jumped. We usually could, you know, size it up in April. Well, that year it jumped. We had to open a classroom up at Vachon Elementary, where the Carver School is now. Well, the parents went ballistic because some kids were going to be there and not in the little red schoolhouse, which was a fire trap and had rats and no insulation. So the movement was made, you know, moved it over to the K building on the east end of the high school campus. And again, that's what, you know, Chautauqua. So buildings, funding. You know, right now it's student population. 1969, we had 1,811 students. Right now, with the kids coming from Seattle, we are at 1,315. Mm-hmm. When I retired in 2004, it was 1,500, but we were already taking kids, and we've had as many as 250 kids coming from the mainland. Kids junior year can go to Running Start, so we don't get funding, full funding there. So, that, you know, those are major, you know, problems. Fortunately, we have good buildings. We're not going to build any more on the 100 acres. I think we have enough. I personally would like to see some low-income housing on part of that 100 acres, which would be just perfect to be close to schools.
It's primarily on the east side that's still available, right?
Yes, if you look, the Chautauqua entry driveway, if you go east, you go to the Beale Road.
Right.
What's that, 500, 600 feet? And then so you go south to the swale, maybe 200 feet. And there are wetlands, but I think, I'm not sure, but I think that's pretty free of it. Anyway, that is my own personal view. Within the schools themselves, the high school is much more academic than it was. There was ironworking, automotive, when, you know, Skip Green could have you bring your 57 Chevy in and you could get in on both sides. Great wood shop. We still have a wood shop, technology, jewelry making, but it is, you know, more of an academic school than it was. Although we encourage kids to go on to the trades, you know, if that is, you know, their desire. I think the school is much more welcoming towards minorities. You know, our Latino population is growing, a great bunch of kids and families, LGBTQ. 30 years ago, certain kids, especially high school, even McMurray, would not come dressed, you know, as they do, as I see at the high school today. That is a major change. And I'm not sure, you know, how much subtly goes on online and whatnot. But at least from my observation, and I try to be real observant, you know, the kids there, you know, how things are going. There are clubs, even at McMurray service type clubs and things that kids are involved with. And I find, too, that graduates, I work on a scholarship committee, the things that they're involved with, I wonder if they sleep, you know, compared to what we did in high school, you know, volunteer, academic, athletic, et cetera. I'm really impressed with them.
So it's getting to technology. So what changes have you seen in technology in the schools? Has that changed a great deal? Or?
Well, I remember 1978 arguing at McMurray whether we were going to allow kids to have calculators.
Oh,
and they were
really
expensive. You know, yeah. They have a brain. They can figure it out. That was. Typing class is gone. computer classes started. Penny Farsi at McMurray was very, you know, helpful in getting that started. And as the district then invested more in that. And so kids, there's a technology class at the high school, and of course all the kids have a laptop and are on the Google system. I don't know what's in those heavy backpacks, but it's not probably textbooks, you know, yeah, the four-pound history book. So there's, I can't say exactly what, you know, all they're doing, but they're getting quite a bit of experience, yes.
Thanks. Scheduled to talk with a Vashon High School student this afternoon who's on the green teams at the school and on the Riptide. I'm curious, Mike, given environment interests on Vashon for seemingly forever and new concerns about climate impacts, what's your sense of the school curriculum to address those types of issues?
I'm not sure how much, you know, like at the elementary, the exact curriculum. I think probably the science teachers, no doubt, are covering that. But I can't really, because I'm not in the classroom or teaching science. But I think from what I see of, you know, posters, especially around the elementary, that there's certainly a keen awareness of working with students, make them aware of that. And I know about the green team at the school lunch, we're trying to separate food for the pigs, food for material to go in recycling. I should know more about that, but I don't.
I did work somewhat with the green teams, and Washington State has a great program for, you know, reducing waste and reducing toxins and things. But just thank you. Just wanted to see what might have hit your awareness on this issue, which maybe is a future change, evolution of the school curriculum.
Well, the students have, you know, water fountain, you know, they just put their cup under and it pours in, and also depending on the amount of rain we've had, the plumbing system for the bathrooms is all, you know, gathered from rainwater on the roof of the high school. So I think kids are aware of that. And what I do notice is that more and more students are carrying water containers, consuming water. It seems to be quite current with some of the athletic teams, you know, to carry even a full gallon around. You'll see them lugging the gallon water around.
So,
it turns out that in involvement with the McMurray Green Team, one of the projects they had is one of the students created some artwork around the Green Team, and they were made into stickers on water bottles, which were handed out to the kids just for that very purpose.
That's great. Good. That's great. I know that you've been out of the system for a little while, Mike, but one of the questions I've been contemplating is what is the philosophy, the teaching philosophy, if you know, today compared to what it was when, I mean, you know, we learned a bunch of rote facts and the history was very delineated in the books, you know, and now the whole teaching concept seems to me to be different. So. Do you know?
It has changed. The arrangement of desks in a classroom, much more often you'll see four desks together versus the straight rows. Mm. I'm still more of a straight row guy. you know, the interactions, students working on a project together, fewer textbooks, things, you know, that are all computerized now, and so many, you know, great programs that kids have access to, that has changed. What else do I see? Influence in the schools happened in 1982 at the elementary. A group of parents, Roxanne Thayer and others, were very interested in alternative school. And it really was difficult because there was the tradition, as I say, the straight rows, the books, rote, memorizing, etc. And the alternative school was more, you know, kids' projects, learning on their own in groups, cross-grading. And we had one there at Burton Elementary School. And it was, I mean, controversial. I think it led to the demise of Superintendent Adams. And, you know, people, the traditionalists wondering, well, will these kids ever amount to, you know, anything? And, of course, there was some homeschool, too, which Dr. Adams did not like, which is found to be just, you know, so beneficial to so many students. Well, I think those ideas of that alternative school, the seating arrangement, projects, cross-grading, et cetera, there's been a very successful cross-graded class that Jerry Wilson started at Chautauqua that is still going on. They could never stop it, I'm sure. Those are changes.
It seems to me like I think Lynn Kerrigan is one who really was talking about critical thinking. Mm-hmm. It's promoting students looking at all aspects of an item rather than mm-hmm. learning the rote stuff, but they're mm-hmm. actually made to think, you know, which is way different than.
Yes. You know. I would agree. When I'm in classes, you know, especially history classes, which I like to substitute, but just the offering, you know, to students to, in fact, think, mm-hmm. Engage, debate mm-hmm. topics. Mm-hmm. That's good.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, thanks. Well, hey, one of my questions that for me was one of my daughter's favorite memories from the school system was air band. Or I think that's what they called it.
Yes, the high school or librarian there.
And I'm wondering if you do. What are some of your favorite memories from your time?
Well, there? I was invited in a few times, although I was at McMurray. But the librarian, I'm trying to think of her name here, she would sponsor that, and it was quite the hit. I mean, there would be tickets for it, but the theater would be packed. And it would be comedy-type stuff. I recall that I was invited once in, and I would be fully geared up in the fire gear. And they made a props bathroom stall. And the vice principal was in there smoking, and I caught him and went up. But, I mean, that's the type of stuff. Song and dance type stuff. I mean, the kids really enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, she loved it.
But it's no more.
They don't do it anymore.
No.
Right? Oh, that's too bad.
I was going to add that, you know, the school district changes today. You know, the inclusion of our minority students, partners in education, the artists in residence, the community scholarship program. I mean, there's so many of those things beneficial to the welfare of students in the schools that just, you know, did not exist 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mike, we're running a little bit low on time here, but I want to thank you for coming to the Brown briefly, helping us to understand the history of Vashon Schools, how much Vashon Schools have changed over time and have changed the island. Mm-hmm. You're welcome to stay on and join us as we talk about some local Vashon, national, international kind of things.
Okay.
But in conclusion, I mean, what for listeners today, what's the one takeaway for you from about the history of Vashon Schools?
I think that's with the students coming from off-island, I mean, it tells you something that they see, their parents see within what the school system offers here, because many of them come here because they heard word of mouth from their neighbors on the mainlands. And I find kids are coming from further. Now it's not only West Seattle, but it's Berry and White Center, Des Moines, SeaTac. A girl from Belfair was coming here a few years ago. I think the program that's offered is one that prepares kids, you know, to be thinkers if they want to go on to school. So many have gone on to such great professions or have become craftsmen and, you know, expert plumbers and contractors. So I think, and the support of the community, such as artists in residence and PI, that people and in the last few years have been supportive of the levies, the building bonds, etc. So there's a keen interest. We can't get at county government, the ferries, the building department for permits, but we can communicate with our school district and people, they will and know that they will be heard if they want changes.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Mike. We appreciate you being here.
Okay.
So
thank you.
Let me throw this out to the Briefleys about what are you doing right now, given that we've gone from 80-degree days to 60-degree days in a matter of a week. What are you doing to prepare for fall and winter? Truman.
My wife recently was wearing a raincoat that I thought was really, really attractive. And she said, the great thing about this raincoat is that you bring it in, you shake it off, and the darn thing's dry. So you know what? I'm looking at rain gear. There you are.
You will probably need it in the next few months.
I think so. Very soon, yes.
When I saw that weather report with the change in the weather, my wife, Lynette, said, oh, we may have to do some gutter work. And I pulled out the ladder and jumped on the roof and cleaned off of a bunch of stuff and started on the major gutters, the one that caused the most problems. They give you a shower when you walk underneath them if they're not cleaned out.
Yeah.
You mean Lynette has not had Craig, you're too old to get up on a ladder talk with
she
you yet.
She has.
But
she,
you've ignored her.
I have, pretty much. Now at least she says you can't go up on a ladder unless I'm here.
Well, listen, I've seen pictures of his ladders. And you know those saying where they say, why do women live longer than men?
Yeah, right.
His picture is one of them, I can tell you.
Yeah, there are a lot of aid calls for ladder accidents.
Yeah, exactly.
Mike, what are you doing to get ready for winter?
Well, repairing a 35-year-old deck, the boards, and it's a 30-by-30 deck that Patty wanted. But, I was going to note to Craig here, is we're working on stairs, that stairs on a deck, it has its ups and downs, Craig, so you're going to have to just keep at it.
Yeah.
How about you, Kevin?
Well, in addition to all those things, just more sort of day to day, I have to find out where my long pants are.
Yes, that's it's funny you mentioned that. I had to dig through my drawers to find my jeans. I haven't had a pair of long pants on since about May, and I sort of think, okay, I know I have them.
Yeah. Well, you'll be like
Keith.
Yeah, Keith Putnam, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah, Keith wore shorts clear into December, know.
Oh, yeah, right. Yep, right. So I know you guys had a chance. We're down to the last minute or so. Anybody have any hopeful comments about fixing the ferry problems?
Yeah, I do. I thought that Amy Dreyer and the chamber did a fabulous job with the ferry forum that they had recently, and I think the real key is keeping up the momentum, keeping up the pressure.
Sure. Yep. Amy Dreyer's a Vashon High School graduate, so you're going to get quality there.
Yeah, she and my daughter were classmates, so she speaks very highly of Amy. Yeah,
great. Yeah, right. Well, and that's
and
what led
a new group focusing on the ferries as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And that, as Craig mentioned, keep the pressure up. I mean, that's what worked in the 1930s and 40s to ultimately get the Vashon Ferry District and ultimately the Washington State Ferry System. Just the people were so fed up with the strikes and the service breaks and the increasing costs of the ferries that they just organized and put pressure on the legislature to create a state ferry system. So I think we're just about out of time. So please join us next week for the Brown Briefly, when we'll be hosting Washington State House of Representative Emily Alvarado. Let me get my tongue straight here. For Kevin, Keith, Craig, I'm Bruce Holman. See you next week.
Bye now.